Most of the results I'll be showing here were obtained with Jonathan Torres, who is a postdoc working with me at Yeshiva University, and he's here in the audience. So I'll be talking about quantum systems that have interacting quantum systems, and they are completely isolated from any bath, any sort of environment, and by that we mean the interaction is very weak, so it takes a very long time for this interaction with the environment to become relevant. And we are going to take these systems out of equilibrium instantaneously, much faster than any characteristic time of the system. And after that, after this perturbation, we ask some questions. So the first question is, how fast can the system evolve? Now, so how fast can isolated, interacting quantum systems evolve and eventually reach a new equilibrium? So this is a question that belongs to this broad field of non-equilibrium quantum physics, which is much less understood than equilibrium quantum physics. And you see that I'm saying this, that these isolated quantum systems will reach an equilibrium. So what do we mean by that? Now, what do we mean by equilibration? So we talk about equilibration in a probabilistic sense. The system evolves for a while, and then it just fluctuates around an equilibrium point, around a steady state. So you see that it's very important to know how large these fluctuations are. And finally, we want to know what kind of equilibrium are we going to reach. Is it thermal equilibrium or not? So this is the issue of thermalization isolated quantum systems. So the main message of this talk is that the answers to all of these questions depend not only on the initial state, not only on the final Hamiltonian after the perturbation, but on the interplay between the two, as is expected. Now, these are not just theoretical questions. No? There is much experimental interest. The big star at the moment are really the experiments with optical lattices, because they can study many different models for the coherent evolution of many different systems for very long times. Since we'll be talking about spin systems, it's worth mentioning that quantum magnetism is currently being studied with optical lattices. Now, they were able, for example, to simulate anti-ferromagnetic spin chains. They also studied the propagation of a spin excitation. And there are several proposals to prepare these special states of magnetism, such as the nail state and the domain wall state. So I'll be showing some results for the time evolution of the nail state here. And in terms of thermalization, well, Robert already told you about this experiment that everybody's familiar with already, right? But they've advised the experiment, and the main message that I want to take from this experiment is just what they saw is, in 1D, close to the integrable point, the system did not thermalize. In 3D, the system thermalized very fast. So this is pretty much the picture that we have. No? Integrability and thermalization do not go together, but if the system is chaotic or the initial state is chaotic, then we can get thermalization. On the other hand, the relaxation process does not seem to depend much on the regime. Now, if it's integrable chaotic, it seems not to matter. Okay. Now, since quantum case is an important concept for the rest of the talk, I'll give a brief introduction, but focusing especially on the differences between full random matrices and systems that have just two-body interactions. Okay. So one way to describe complex systems, like many-body quantum systems, is by treating them statistically with full random matrices. And this was Wigner's approach when he was trying to describe heavy nuclei. Now, matrices filled with random numbers, the only constraint is that they should satisfy the symmetries of the system you're trying to describe. Full random matrices have interesting properties. I'll tell you about some of them. So, for example, if you look at the level spacing distribution, and the distribution of the spacing between neighboring levels, the distribution of these S's here, you see that for full random matrices, it follows this red curve, which is known as Wigner-Dyson distribution. The exact shape of the Wigner-Dyson distribution depends on the symmetries of the system. But a main feature here is what you're seeing here. There is no S. There is no spacing very close to zero. No, so you have no degeneracies. You have level repulsion. And level repulsion was seen not just in real nuclei, not data from real nuclei, but in many different. So this is an example of data from real nucleus. No, but it was seen in many other systems, atoms, molecules, quantum dots. And also, in the quantum version of classically chaotic billiards, like C9's billiards. Now, again, you got the level repulsion. And this established this connection that we make between what we call quantum chaos and Wigner-Dyson distribution. And so what we call quantum chaos are just signatures that you find at the quantum level that tells you whether the system
at the classical level is chaotic or not. And chaotic there in the sense of Lyapunov exponent and extreme sensitivity to the initial conditions. So level spacing distribution is one of the properties associated with eigenvalues. There are many others, but I wanted to tell you more about the eigenstates now. Okay, the eigenstates of full random matrices, they are completely delocalized in any basis that you choose to write them. So they are completely spread out. And so if you look at, you choose any basis, these coefficients here are just random numbers. There are quantities that we use to try to measure how much spread out a state is. One of these quantities is what we call inverse participation ratio. So it's just 1 over the sum of those coefficients to the fourth. And so you see that if the state is very localized in the basis that you picked, you have very few Cs, so your IPR will be very small. If your state is very spread out, then you have many, many tiny Cs, and your IPR would be very large. So when you're dealing with full random matrices, all of the states are completely delocalized, so the IPR for all of them have the maximum value, which is proportional to the dimension of the whole matrix. And this is what we are showing here. So I picked one full random matrix and looked at the eigenstates of all of the eigenstates and plotted the IPR. And you see we get this flat curve. Now, apart from some fluctuations, they are pretty equivalent, all these states. There are other quantities like the Shannon entropy, for example. Okay, now, the problem with full random matrices is that they do not describe any real system. No? They are useful for describing the fluctuations of the spectrum, but they don't capture the details. Now, full random matrices are filled, so they imply the simultaneous interactions of many particles, not many particles interacting at the same time, which does not exist in real systems. Now, real systems have few body interactions, usually just two body interactions, like the systems that we'll be talking about here. So we'll be talking about one-dimensional spin-half systems described by Hamiltonians such as this one. Now you just have two body interactions here. Well, you are familiar with this matrix, let me just go quickly over it. This first term here is the term of non-interaction. It's the non-interacting term. It's in the language of spins, the flip-flop term. It just moves the excitation along. It's equivalent to a hopping term. And this is the term of interaction. If you write the matrix, the Hamiltonian matrix, let me just say this system, of course, can also be mapped onto hardcore boson and spinless fermions, right? So if you write this Hamiltonian matrix in a basis, this product states, now where you have products of spins up and down, then of course this Ising part is just in the diagonal, and the flip-flop term, the non-interacting term, is in the off-diagonal part. Now, clearly, this Hamiltonian has nothing to do with full random matrices. Now, it's extremely sparse, and there is no randomness here. The coupling parameter here is fixed. The anisotropy parameter here is fixed. And still, in systems like this, not exactly this one, but similar systems, you can get level repulsion. So let me give you some examples. That model that we just saw is known as the XXT model, right? It's integrable. Now, when you have just coupling between nearest neighbors, it can be solved with the beta ansatz. If you look at the level spacing distribution, now for these eigenvalues, you get the usual Poisson distribution. What it says is that crossing is allowed. You have degeneracy there. But let me modify this Hamiltonian slightly. If I add a magnetic field, a static magnetic field, to a single site away from the edges if the system is open, now to a single site, so I create a Zeeman splitting that is different from the others, the presence of this defect, the presence of this impurity, can lead to the level repulsion. Or if instead I add coupling between second neighbors, again I can get level repulsion. Now these systems are finite. No, it's not just by simply adding this term that I immediately get the Wigner-Dyson distribution. What you see is as d, or as lambda, increases, you get your Poisson distribution gets more and more deformed until you eventually get the Wigner-Dyson. And what we see is that the larger the system size, the smaller this value needs to be. Okay. Now, so far we didn't see any difference from full random matrices. Now, again, for the bulk of states for these spin systems, we got level repulsion, just like we get with full random matrices. So where are the differences? Okay,
The differences appear, for example, in the density of states. No? The density of states for full random matrices, they have this semicircular shape. While the density of states for systems that have just two-body interactions has a Gaussian shape. If we look at the eigenstates, as we said, the eigenstates of full random matrices, they are all equivalent. No? They are all completely delocalized. There is no difference. But in systems where we have just two-body interactions, the IPR, the level of delocalization, depends very much where we are in the spectrum. Now, if you're right in the middle of the spectrum, yeah, these states can be very much spread out. Now you have a large density, now so you have strong mixing. But if you move to the edges, these states are pretty localized. And of course, the results now depend on the basis that we picked. Okay, so this is an introduction. Now I'm going to go for the results, start talking about relaxation. Okay, so the scenario is that of a quench. The system is initially in an eigenstate of a certain initial Hamiltonian, preferably not the ground state. And that we are going to change the parameters instantaneously, end up with a final Hamiltonian. So that initial state evolves according to the eigenvalues and eigenstates of that final Hamiltonian. So the question now is, how fast is this state going to change? Okay. And to try to quantify that, we are going to look at the overlap between the initial state and the evolved one, which is known as fidelity. Now it's also related to the Loschmidt echo. If you write this initial state in terms of the eigenstates of the final Hamiltonian, you see that the fidelity is simply the Fourier transform of those components, no? Of the square of those components. So the fidelity is just the Fourier transform of the energy distribution of the initial state. This distribution is also known as local density of state, is also known as strength function, is extensively studied in nuclear physics, right? Because it contains information about the lifetime of the initial state. It's also known as work distribution function, these new studies about quantum thermodynamics, where they try to quantify the amount of work done in a quench. Very well, so if we know this distribution, we are done, we know how the fidelity should behave. There were many studies back in the end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s, studying the Loschmidt echo, the fidelity behavior, and the idea initially was, if the system is chaotic, the decay should be exponential, as you would expect from Fermi-Golden rule. Then there were some studies saying, well, but even if the system is integrable, but my initial state, the energy of the initial state is sufficiently spread out, I should again get an exponential. And there were studies that went beyond and said, wait a second, this behavior can be even faster than exponential. And this is what I'm going to show to you. Okay? So I'm going to start showing an extreme case that is not realistic, just to set the lower bounds, and then I'll move to more realistic cases. So what we are doing here is we are picking an initial state, arbitrary initial state, and I'll let it evolve according to full random matrices. Remember, they are not realistic. No? If I look at the energy distribution of this initial state in that full random matrices, I get, again, the semicircular shape. This is just a reflection of the density of states. So with this semicircular shape, I can go and get an expression for my fidelity decay, an analytical expression. And this is the one, it involves a Bessel function of first order. And it's the one appearing here in red. Now the circles are numerical results. So with this analytical expression, now I can compute the time that it takes for the fidelity to reach this dashed line. So this dashed line is the saturation point. The system is finite, right? So after this saturation point, after this infinite time average, the system will be just fluctuating. Right? And these oscillations are small. This is a log plot. OK, so I'm going to be calling relaxation time, the time that it takes for the fidelity to reach the dashed line. OK, so let's see what is this infinite time average. This is the expression for the evolution of the fidelity. Right? After a long time, you see that this term here, these phases, just lead to the fast fluctuations. So the infinite time average is just given by the sum of those components to the fourth. Now, so this is what we've seen before, right? This is just the level of delocalization of the initial state. It tells us how much spread out the initial state is in the energy eigenbasis. Yeah, so we saw this before. This is 1 over IPR. Now, we have an arbitrary state that is projecting to random states. Yeah? So because it's projecting on full random matrix. So this state itself is a random state. So we know what is the value of this IPR, as we said before, is proportional to the dimension of the matrix. Okay, so with the infinite time average and with that analytical expression, I can get the time, this tr here, the time that it takes for the fidelity to reach this dashed line, which is the relaxation time. So this is the lower bound. Now this is the minimal relaxation time for many body quantum systems in this general picture of a quench. Now nothing can beat full random matrices. So this is the minimal relaxation time when we have a single peak in the energy distribution. But let me make a parenthesis here. There were old studies for the fidelity based on the uncertainty principle, and they really got the ultimate lower bound. And this is a cosine expression, which is faster than what we saw for full random matrix. The cosine expression is the blue one here. Now, to reach this limit, the energy distribution needs to have like two peaks far away in energy, right? And this is not what we usually have in global quenches. So this minimum time that I showed to you here appears when the energy distribution of the initial state is a single peak. Okay, but as I said, this is not realistic. Real systems are not described by full random matrices. What happens if I pick now a realistic system, let my system, my initial state evolve according to one of these systems where I have just two body interactions? I'm going to show you a general picture, and then I'll give a specific example. Now, the energy distribution of the initial state, when I project it into a realistic system with two-body interactions, depends on different factors. It will now depend first on the energy of this initial state. Where is this energy when it's projected into the final Hamiltonian? Is this energy very close to the edges of the spectrum, or is this energy very close to the middle of the spectrum? Okay? And it also depends on the strength of the perturbation. Do we have weak perturbation? Do we have strong perturbation? If the perturbation is strong, and if the energy of my initial state is somewhere close or away from the edges of the final Hamiltonian, then the energy distribution may reach its maximal possible spreading, which is again a Gaussian. No? And this maximal possible spreading, the envelope of this maximal possible spread is this black line here, which is known as energy shell. So if I have an initial state that can fill the energy shell substantially, then it's pretty easy to get an expression for the fidelity decay. So this is my energy shell, a Gaussian, Fourier transform of Gaussian, it's a Gaussian again. And this is what you see in this picture here. Now let me tell you about some details. No matter what kind of fidelity decay you have, cosine, the Bessel function, the Gaussian, whatever, at very short times, it will be quadratic in time. No, there is no question about that. You can just go back to the expression for the fidelity and do a perturbation theory here. No, so very short times is quadratic no matter what. But there were some studies by the quantum case community where they said that, well, in this limit of strong perturbation, maybe we would have this Gaussian behavior surviving for longer time. And indeed, that's what we see. And in fact, we see that it survives. It holds all the way to saturation. And if it holds, it persists all the way to saturation, we can get a very simple expression for the relaxation time. So the relaxation time depends simply on IPR, the level of delocalization of the initial state, with respect to the final Hamiltonian. And on this sigma here, sigma is the width of this distribution. All right, not all initial states will have this Gaussian shape. No? Some of them are more restricted. So let me show you now some particular specific examples. So here we're starting with a quench where the initial Hamiltonian is the XXZ model, the integrable model. And I'm going to add couplings between second neighbors. Okay? And I'm going to pick initial states away from the edges. If the perturbation is very weak, no, so the initial Hamiltonian and the final Hamiltonian are very similar. So, of course, the energy distribution will be very narrow. It will be close to a delta function. And, of course, the fidelity decay will be very, very slow. But as we increase this perturbation, what happens is the distribution will start broadening. And eventually, it gets the Lorentzian shape, the bright Wigner shape. And then, at this point, the behavior of the fidelity will be quadratic for short times, as we said. This just comes from perturbation theory, and then it switches into the exponential behavior. But suppose you increase this perturbation even further. The energy distribution keeps broadening until it reaches this Gaussian shape. This is the limit of strong perturbation. And then the fidelity decay will be Gaussian for long times, and it can, in fact, go all the way to saturation. Now, what we saw is that this limit of strong perturbation, Gaussian shape, seems to be possible only when we have global quench. So this quench here was a global quench. We added, we affected all the sites of the Hamiltonian. When we did local quenches, that was not possible, at least not for the quenches that we considered. So we consider a local quench that is the following. This is the initial Hamiltonian. So the initial state comes from this initial Hamiltonian. And we added a single magnetic field, a magnetic field to a single site. And in this case, in this local quench, the maximum spreading of our initial state was Lorentzian. And so the decay was maximally exponential. It could not go beyond that. It's still pretty fast. An exponential behavior is still pretty fast for a local quench. No, but we were not able to go beyond that. So you have to keep in mind that the initial state is not localized in space. No, the initial state is very much spread out. No, it's just the quench that is localized in space. And this exponential behavior for the Loschmidt echo was something that Aditi and Marco also saw recently. No, so let me just repeat. If I have a quench, a local quench, or a global quench with intermediate perturbation, I have very similar behaviors, no? Because I get the same energy distribution of the initial state, so the same exponential behavior. But if I increase the perturbation for the global quench, I can go into that Gaussian behavior and get this Gaussian decay, and sometimes all the way to saturation. Okay, so. Well, the same system size.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, so now consider a system like 100 times larger. So then this story will change.
No, that is an interesting point. What we see is that for that quench, that value of d, if you increase the system size, the d can be smaller and smaller. Now, so you need a smaller and smaller value of d for the system to be completely chaotic, for you to get a. So that's where it's coming from. So just one more example for the fidelity decay. Now I'm just going to show, we checked many different initial states, but I'm going to show the nail state because I think it illustrates well this dependence on the relationship between initial state and final Hamiltonian. So we are going to let the nail state evolve according to these Hamiltonians here, where we are going to choose different parameters. So this is the delta, the anisotropy parameter, and lambda, which is the strength of this coupling between second neighbors. Okay, so different parameters, different values here, such as, well, lambda zero. So like here, no? Lambda zero, so we have just the integrable case, and isotropic and anisotropic. Then lambda 0.4, and then lambda 1. And you see that this is a global quench, because we are basically going from the Ising part to this Hamiltonian, where we have Hopping and other terms. And for these choices of parameters, we are in the strong perturbation limit. So what we expect is Gaussian shape for the energy distribution of the initial state when it's projected into all these possibilities. And this is indeed what we get. Now, so these are all these five combinations of parameters. And the black solid line is the energy shell. Now, the energy shell for all of these different choices is exactly the same. Now, the width is exactly the same, because the width of the shell depends only on the off-diagonal terms. The off-diagonal terms for this kind of quench is just the Hopping term. No? So it does not depend on the anisotropy. The anisotropy is just in the diagonal. And for the nail state, it does not depend either on the lambda, on the couple, the strength of the couple between second neighbors. So for all of these different combinations, we have the same Gaussian, the same width. What changes is the filling of the energy shell. No? So when we quench the system into this integrable regime, especially in the isotropic regime, you see that the energy of that initial state is very low, no? Closer to the edges. So we don't get a good feeling. Now you have this spiky distribution skewed to low energies. But as you decrease the anisotropy and you move towards the chaotic region, you see that the energy here is moving closer and closer to zero, closer and closer to the middle of the spectrum where the states get pretty delocalized. At the edges, as we said, things are very localized. Now, but because the width is the same for all of these different cases, we have an initial state that is evolving according to very different Hamiltonians showing exactly the same behavior. So all these symbols here, they fall on top of each other and coincide very well with the analytical expression. The difference is at the saturation point. The saturation point for the integrable case happens much earlier because it's pretty localized. But when you go into the chaotic region, then the level of for the saturation point happens much later. Okay, these are results for the fidelity. What I wanted to show you now is some ideas about the observables. This is not complete yet, but let's see. To study the evolution of observables, things get more complicated because it depends on the observers that you're going to select. But we saw that a very simple picture appears if this observable commutes with the initial Hamiltonian, the Hamiltonian from where we picked the initial state. And this is because the evolution of this observable depends explicitly on the fidelity. Now, so we can try to get some of what we learned from the fidelity to try to describe this evolution. At least for very short times, we know that this behavior has to be quadratic in time. Remember, the fidelity was exponential t squared, right? So we know that this behavior should be quadratic in time. If it does not commute with the initial Hamiltonian, it's not necessarily quadratic. And you see that dependence on the width of the energy shell showing up explicitly. So if we pick an initial state like the Nell state, where that width does not depend on the parameters of the Hamiltonian, you end up having observables evolving according to completely different Hamiltonians, integrable, chaotic, isotropic, anisotropic, and showing a very similar initial evolution. And they all fall on top of each other. So these are results for the spin-spin correlation. These are results for the structure factor. And the solid line is the analytical result, which is valid for extremely short time, so it's not so interesting. It would be nice to be able to extend it for longer times. Now, what happens at longer times, in some cases, are pretty expected. Like for the spin-spin correlation, this splitting of the curves is understandable. At the bottom here, we have the integrable case. Now, so what this is saying is that at long times, the correlations will survive in the integrable regime. But at the top here, we have the chaotic systems, indicating that at very long times, the correlations are gone. And this is pretty much what we see, and we have some scaling analysis at very long times. Okay, so these are some ideas for the relaxation process. The results for the observables are not complete yet, but let's see now what happens after a very long time, after the relaxation. So let's talk about the fluctuations now. So the observables evolve according to this expression. As we said, these phases here will lead to very fast oscillations. So in a long time, they just average out. And what remains in a long time, the infinite time average, is just this sum. So it's just the diagonal terms. And it became common to refer to this result as a result from the diagonal sum. So as we saw, as I said in the beginning of the talk, what we have is the observer is evolving for a while. And then after a time, after a long time, it just oscillates, it just fluctuates around this infinite time average, which is the equilibrium point. What we want to know now is how large are these fluctuations and how do they depend on system size. Okay, there were studies based on full random matrices that show that the size of those fluctuations should decrease exponentially with system size. So L is the system size. But these are full random matrices. What we asked ourselves is, what would happen to the size of these fluctuations if we had realistic systems with two-body interaction? Chaotic, but two-body interaction. Okay. And on the other hand, for integrable systems, there are analytical results and many numerical results showing that the size of this fluctuation should go as much lower, no, 1 over square root of the system size. But these were results obtained for non-interacting integrable systems. And non-interacting integrable systems are very different, of course, from interacting integrable systems. If you look at the level spacing distribution, in the non-interacting case, you have a peak. You don't have the usual Poisson distribution. You have just a peak indicating an enormous amount of degeneracies there. If you switch the interaction, even a small interaction, you recover the Poisson distribution. And so our question was, what would happen to these fluctuations if we had interactions? And what we see is that it does not matter if the system is integrable or chaotic. If there are interactions, if there aren't too many degeneracies, then the behavior of the size of the fluctuation should decrease exponentially system size. We checked for many different observables, now kinetic energy, spin-spin correlation in Z and X, structure factor in Z and X, many different initial states, so each curve here is a different initial state, and different Hamiltonians. I'm showing results for the worst one, the integrable isotropic. And what we see is just the change in the slope. Now, at the bottom here, we have states that we pick from full random matrices. Now, so the size of the fluctuations are very small and decrease very fast with system size. At the top, we have some special states like the domain wall state or the nail state. The black one is the domain wall. So the domain wall state is a hard state to evolve, especially right at delta 1, right? Because it's hard to break the pairs of excitation. And so this is a state that has energy close to the edges of the spectrum. But even there, we got those straight lines. So the decay is exponential with system size. What changes is the value of kappa, which depends on the level of delocalization of the initial state, no? With respect to the energy eigenbase. And this goes hand in hand with some analytical studies. They got bounds for the observable, and they say that the size of those fluctuations depend on the level of delocalization. So for observed, they are just bounds. For the fidelity, the result is exact. Now, the size of the fluctuation simply depends on how much spread out the initial state is. All right. Yeah.
This is the fluctuations once you have to do a steady state about the, even in the thermal, what would be a thermal value if you have thermal?
Yeah. So it's just the equilibrium point. I don't know yet what this equilibrium point is, if it's thermal or not, but it's the steady state. So I'm just looking at the size of the fluctuations around that.
And the 1 over square root length result is for what kind of integrable system?
Non-interacting, like a XX model, no? Just the Hopping term. Because it has too many degeneracies there. And all the other systems, even in integrable, the decay is exponential. But as you start getting too close to the edges of the spectrum, things start getting suspicious.
And what, how does this translate to statements about the matrix elements between, of observables between eigenstates? Does it come directly from the fact that they're exponentially smaller?
The off-diagonal terms, yeah. The off-diagonal terms are very small, and also the lack of the, where is it? Here. The off-diagonal terms are small, and also the lack of degeneracy. Yeah? That is two important points. Okay, so we got an idea for the relaxation process. We said that after relaxation, the fluctuations are very small. So we are really very close to the equilibrium point, no? Most of the time. And the question now is, what is this equilibrium point? Is it thermal or not? And this is a very old question, no? The issue of thermalization in isolated quantum systems. Like it has been addressed by von Neumann, 29. There was a peak of interest in the 90s, much in connection with the development of quantum chaos. And more recently, there has been renewed interest in an explosion of works, in part because of those experimental results that I told you about. And I'll tell you what is being done recently. Now, one of the main goals is to try to find out, as many people already said here, what are the conditions for that infinite time average to be very similar to a thermodynamic average. They are not going to be equal because the systems are finite. So we want to find the conditions for them to be close, and more important, for them to get closer and closer as the system size increases. So what are the conditions? Well, you've heard here about the ETH condition. So the condition is that this expectation values would not fluctuate much in time. Fine. When would this be valid?
For sure, if you have full random matrix. Now, if you have full random matrix, there is nothing to ask anymore.
If you have full random matrices, as we said, these states are just completely spread out. They are all equivalent. So there is no more question.
The thing is just that real systems are not described by full random matrices.
And what we did with Marcus in 2009, 2010 was, OK, so let's have a look at the structure of realistic, of the eigenstates of realistic systems. What we did was to study the structure of the states for realistic systems, just like many people had done before, for nuclear shell models, for two-body random ensemble, for band random matrices, and so on. And we picked here specific systems, like the system for hardcore boson, spinless fermions. And this is the Hamiltonian for the hardcore boson, which is pretty much the same that I told you before about spin half systems, right? So we have couplings between nearest neighbors. So this is the integrable part, Hopping interaction. And we also have couplings between second neighbors, no Hopping and interaction. We are going to put T prime and V prime equal. Okay? And we looked at the structure of the eigenstates, the value of IPR, the value of Shannon entropy for all of the eigenstates of this Hamiltonian. Now, what you have to be careful about is in which basis you're going to do that. So we studied in the basis that corresponds to the eigenstates of the integrable part of the Hamiltonian, now separating the regular from the chaotic part. Okay. So when T prime and V prime are zero, we just have this integral part, then of course the eigenstates and the basis vectors are the same. So the value of IPR is just one. As we start increasing the T prime value, what you see is, of course, the states start spreading out. It starts spreading out, and when you are in the chaotic region, you see that you get this smooth function with energy. So it's at this point, at the chaotic limit, that you pick any wind of energy here, and you know that the states are pretty much the same. No, they're all equivalent. Yeah, go on.
So is this a statement always about typicality, or is it really about you want to for every single state?
We were checking every single state because we are interested in identifying what happens in the whole spectrum. Now, typicality says if you pick a general state, then it should thermalize. Now I'm checking all of the states, very close to the ground state and high energies and so on.
But do you think that is the definition of ETH? Do you require that the observable state was for every single eigenstate or only for the
No. So what ETH will be valid here in this region? No? In this region, these states here are pretty much typical. No? But if I get away from that region, if I go very close to the edges, then it becomes problematic. No, so here, the states are pretty localized, so they may not be so typical in the chaotic regime. Now, if you're going close to the integrable point, you see that they are not typical at all. Now, you have a state very close in energy with completely different structure. Now, so ETH is not valid here for sure, and ETH may be problematic at very low energies, at least for our finite systems. No, I don't know what happens in the thermodynamic limit. This is for any model. I don't know any model. No, that's too much. But if you pick any random matrix model, and two-body random matrix model.
I have an example of a random matrix with sparse interactions that gives you rare states in the middle of the spectrum.
Yeah, that's the story of the rare states. Yeah. That may be. That we never saw the rare states. Yeah.
You get a thermal state, but it means there can be a set of measures zero, so to speak, which are not like that. Or are you literally saying, if I look in the middle of the spectrum, that every single eigenstate with certainty is thermal?
I cannot tell you. I have no theorem for that, right? From our numerical studies, then it looks like with certainty. But Robert has cases where he saw some rare states even in the middle. So I cannot tell you with certainty, right? I don't know. Maybe it could be a scar thing. All right. So summarizing again, typical states are when we are in the chaotic region,
away from the edges. Edges are problematic, and integrable point is also problematic. And of course, these results for eigenstates are reflected into the results for the observables. No? So this is the first place to look at. So let me show you some results for eigenstates, for observables, just confirming what we saw before. And I'm coming back to the spin half system. So here is the system with, yeah?
So as you go to lower to the batch tails, what aspect of eigenstate formalization breaks down? Can one quantify the, I mean, I would think at low energies, the system effectively has some single particle like description. And level spacing become polynomial in L. That's in some sense saying that the single particle like. So that's, is there an energy scale that one can sort of,
I mean,
in what way ETH is breaking down, or does one, are there steps of breakdown of ETH?
Yeah. It would be great to know if there is a threshold, where this threshold is. I don't know. Because you see, the problem with doing numerics is I have just three system sizes. I cannot give you any scaly analysis. I cannot tell you much. Now, like Marcus now has this model that he told you about on Monday, where he can go into the thermodynamic limit. But that model also has problems when you go very close to the edge, and has problems when you go very high in temperature. So you're always trapped.
Well, it doesn't make sense. If you're at a thermodynamic limit, you don't have a few body picture, right? That's disappeared off to the edges, and somehow you're forced to look in the region where there's a finite density of particles.
Yeah. That's a question, or it's just a comment?
Well, I was just trying to respond to this question, really.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So results for the okay, so this is the spin system with the defect. This is the spin system with coupling between next nearest neighbors, and this is the integrable XXZ model. No? So you see smooth behavior with energy here, and here the blur. If you look at observables, so this is the spin-spin correlation, and the inset here you have the disruptor factor. So you see things become pretty squeezed in the chaotic region and blurs again in the integrable region. Just a reflection of the eigenstate. But more important than these snapshots, what you really have to look at is the size of these fluctuations. Now, how do they depend on system size? And more than just dispersion, what we looked at was the maximum minus the minimum point to be sure that there was nothing going out like rare states, maybe. Okay. But so what you do see clearly is that in the middle of the spectrum, in the chaotic region, things decrease. The size of the fluctuations decrease with system size. At the edges, things are not clear. No? But we have very few system size. And in the integrable region also, it's not clear what happens.
But does it decrease exponentially?
How can I say I just have 3 points? But yeah, that we see, but that's why I'm trapped.
And there is other studies which do try to study the rate of this.
You see, to do this kind of studies, you need exact diagonalization. You need all of the eigenstates, all of the eigenvalues. And you cannot go beyond matrices that are like 20,000, 30,000. That's the problem. Okay, so from this picture, the idea is that we should expect thermalization in the chaotic region away from the edges. And now let me try to confirm that with some numerical studies. So what I'm showing here is the difference between the diagonal, the infinite time average, and the thermodynamic average. Okay, and again, here is the model with impurity. This is the model with coupling between next nearest neighbors. And what do we see? As the perturbation increases and the system becomes more chaotic, then this difference decreases. No? So the more chaotic, the better things look. And you see also improvement with system size. Now, there are large fluctuations. The systems are too small, but this is the general trend. Now, let me go. I'm in the chaotic region. Now, let me see how things depend on the spectrum, on the energy of the initial state. So T here is temperature, but it's pretty much the energy of the initial state. Okay? So if the energy is very small, you see that the difference is large. As I go closer to the middle of the spectrum, the difference improves. So again, indicating if I go closer to the middle of the spectrum, you should expect thermalization. Okay, so this is the idea. This is the idea for the chaotic region. ETH is valid there. But let me make a comment for the integrable case that not everybody likes to hear. But okay, suppose now I have my final Hamiltonian is integrable. So if I look at this, this comparison between these two results, I do not expect thermalization because of these expectation values, as we saw, have large fluctuations. Okay, but we check that if you pick initial states with higher and higher energy with respect to the final Hamiltonian, what happens is this initial state gets more and more spread out because we are going to that region where the density is larger, right? So it gets more and more spread out. And if we look at those differences between infinite time average and thermodynamic average, it looks like things are improving, even though the final Hamiltonian is integral. So what could be happening there? No? Is this a sign of thermalization or not? When the state gets, the initial state gets pretty much spread out, those components there, now you feel the energy shell, those components there are just random numbers from a Gaussian distribution. So here, there is no more correlations between the components and the expectation values. So this allows us to get, for things to look thermal. It's not such a good example of thermalization in the sense that everything was thermal from the beginning. No? So you don't have this process of reaching thermalization. No? So, but it's a good example of this dependence between initial state and final Hamiltonian. I can tell you more if you're interested about this case. Okay, so let me just summarize. The main message, as I said, is dynamics, relaxation process, size of the fluctuations after relaxation, and viability of thermalization depends on both. You cannot just look at one or the other, but it depends on the initial state and the final Hamiltonian. Now, if you know the energy distribution of the initial state with respect to the final Hamiltonian, right, then we know how the fidelity decay behaves, and we get an idea for the observables. Remember, the null state looks like a very special state. Now it looks pre-chaotic, spreads out very fast. The size of the fluctuations does not matter if the system is integrable or chaotic. What matters is the level of delocalization of the initial state again. And finally, thermalization. Thermalization in general, yes, happens when the final Hamiltonian is chaotic. But again, careful with the initial state, no? Away from the edge. And even if the final Hamiltonian is integrable, but my initial state is sufficiently spread out so then I can sample all of these different symmetry sectors, I get a sense of thermal here, thermal features. So that's it. Thank you for your attention.
So are those states what happens to their distribution with respect to the conservation law?
Yeah. So I have, I think, okay, so let me just, in general, right, if you are quenching integrable systems, then you would expect to be confined to some sectors there, and you would have to take into account the conserved quantities. But if your initial state is sufficiently spread out, now it's a random initial state, then you're going to be sampling all of these different sectors at random. So that gives you a sense of thermal features. It's not so much so, right? It's thermal from the beginning, but that's what I was telling you. It's not so interesting from the thermalization point of view, but it's interesting for this relationship between initial and final.
And so can you prepare such states as ground states of other local Hamiltonians? Is there a weaker term that says all ground states of other local Hamiltonians will pick out GGs because they have?
So I'm always away from ground state. No? So I start from excited states and quench. Now Aditi has a work with Mark where they start with a ground state and then they do a global quench, brings this state very much an excited level and then do another quench. So something like that could be. But you see there is an additional step to bring the state at high energy.
Yeah, let's thank you.
Thank you.